Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Tuesday, August 11th. It is another busy news day across the county and there's lots for us to get through, including another heat health alert in force as all of Kent is now officially in drought.
I mean, clearly the climate emergency is here with us right now.
Innovative modular homes for families in need of temporary accommodation.
In that immediate short term, when a family finds themselves homeless, then we've got this accommodation waiting and ready.
And people claiming unemployment are now helping to train the British Army for mass casualty events.
I think it's such a rush. We get such adrenaline from doing it. When we're doing it, it's so real.
Do stay listening. We have all of that still to come. But first, let's take a look at our top story for today. The chief executive of the Port of Dover has been telling the Kent Online podcast how plans to increase queuing capacity will reduce the need for traffic measures on the M20 and A20. £40 million is being spent on a project to reconfigure land at the Eastern Docks. Half of what's coming is from government funding. Lucy's been chatting to Doug Bannister, who is the chief executive of the Port of Dover.
Our outbound controls project has been a project that we've had in design for a number of years, and it's been through a number of iterations. Effectively, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be changing the order of the controls and pushing the border controls deeper into the port. The beneficial effect of that is it's going to create more capacity for both processing and for traffic coming into the port. That's why we went out looking for Leveling Up Fund grant money, because of the beneficial effects that it will have for the residents of East Kent.
Yeah, I know people are very fed up with Dover Tap and Operation Brock being in force. Is this going to make a difference to that?
So, you know, we work really hard with our partners across Kent when we're facing a busy period to try and come up with regimes to ensure that any disruption is as minimal as possible. What we are going to be delivering through our outbound controls project with the Leveling Up Fund grant is a fundamental change in how traffic is processed in the port. What the aim, clear aim is to work towards an elimination of both TAP and Brock. Now, it could very well be that we need these things for exceptional circumstances, the tools of TAP and Brock for exceptional circumstances, such as weather delays or technical failures and that sort of stuff. But we're hopeful that the consequences of making these investments inside the port will mean that TAP and Brock will be all but eliminated for operational reasons.
So when is work expected to start and what exactly will it involve on the ground?
So the work is the main design is underway at the moment, and hopefully we'll be into construction next year. What we have said is to open up the first phase of the project, which is around the reordered border controls and create a big step change in capacity. We're aiming for the end of 2028. So not immediate, but in terms of infrastructure terms, very fast.
So when can we expect to see a change in the frequency of Operation Brock and Dover Tap being put in? Will that be from end of 2028, sort of day one of having this new capacity, or is it going to be even longer than that before we see that change?
What we should see is the beneficial effects coming through almost immediately. Now, it does depend a little bit on some of the later stages of the project to get the full benefit out of it. Clearly, if we're successful in hitting the timelines, the current project timelines of the end of 2028, mind you, we still need to go to tender. We still need to do all the programs and all that kind of stuff. But if we are successful, the next really busy period would probably be Easter 2029, where we should feel the effects at that stage.
So that's another, well, more than 2 years of Brock for people.
The scale of the infrastructure investment that we're making and the intervention that we're going to be making into the port, this is significant. This is a significant project, £40 million worth of project. We are going to be moving as fast as we can because, you know, like everybody, including all of us who live in East Kent, that work in the port, we would like to see this improvement as quickly as possible. We will do it in the best possible way we can to try and get the benefits flowing through as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I know these things take time, but is there anything going on in the meantime, or will it be Brock that we're relying on for another 2.5 years?
So as we approach every busy period, we work closely with the great people of the Kent Medway Resilience Forum, Kent Police, our ferry operators, to try and make certain we can reduce the requirements for both TAP and Brock. What we have found is that we've gotten much, much better through the use of some artificial intelligence tools at putting TAP on as late as possible and taking it off as quickly as possible, which has reduced the time that we're in TAP. Having said that, we do know that TAP has got a detrimental effect on the residents, in particular of Aycliffe, that we really want to work hard on trying to find a solution to as quickly as possible.
Operation Brock is still in force on the M20 between junctions 8 and 9 and is expected to be in place until August 24th. Now, this all comes as it has been a difficult few days on Kent's roads with a number of accidents and disruptions, starting with a motorcyclist who's been taken to hospital following a crash on a slip road of the M20. He was treated for injuries after colliding with a car on the London-bound stretch at Junction 6 near Maidstone earlier this morning. The road has now reopened. Now, elsewhere, the M25 is back open this morning following a lorry fire which caused severe delays. Crews were called to tackle the blaze near Westrum yesterday evening. They had to unload the contents of the lorry to put the flames out. Luckily, no one was hurt.
Kent Online News.
Taking a look at what else is making news today, another amber heat health alert comes into force across Kent today. Temperatures are due to hit the mid-30s by Thursday. Kent is now also officially in drought and there's no sign of significant rainfall on the horizon. I've been speaking to Stuart Jeffrey, who is the leader of Maidstone Borough Council and a Green Party representative on Kent County Council. He and I spoke about the various impacts across the county.
I mean, clearly, the climate emergency is here with us right now. At Maidstone Borough Council, we take that really seriously. So we have both a plan to reduce our carbon emissions, but also to adapt to the changing climate, which means we're planting trees, for example, in the town centre to reduce the temperatures. We're looking at our parks and thinking, how safe are they in terms of wildfires? So we're working with Kent Fire and Rescue to make sure to review access so that if they do catch a light, we can get the fire engines there quickly. And we're doing other things such as supporting the rivers in particular, which are running desperately low at the moment. So there's a range of things we're doing, particularly around drought, and the heat as well is a real problem. So we've recently reissued the call places that we have in the town. So I think we've got five call sites for people who are struggling in the heat to go along. These are air-conditioned places, such as our community arts hub, that they can go to. They can sit down in the cool and feel a bit better, because clearly the heat is going to hurt a lot of people, and it kills people. There were the previous heat waves took, I think, 3,000 lives earlier this year. So we are worried people are dying as a result of this.
Have you seen much of an uptake? So you're opening up these cool spaces. What sort of the use has been like? People are making use of those cool spaces?
Not much of an uptake so far, but we're trying to make sure that the message is out there for people who are struggling in the heat. Particularly in the town centre, we've got a lot of offices that have been converted to flats. They are often very, very hot, so and people don't have access to gardens or anything in those. So we're encouraging people, if they are struggling in the heat, just come down and come to the Arts Hub or the museum, just so you can sit and cool back down again.
And in terms, I suppose, other messages that you want to get out to people during these times, I mean, knowing that there are cool spaces available, that's one. What about things about fire safety in sort of parks and open spaces as well, making sure that, things like disposable barbecues and like properly disposing of your cigarette butts? Because there have been a couple of blazes in sort of the Moat Park area already. Is it a concern that people just aren't getting the message about staying safe in these conditions?
Yeah, I mean, there are people who are very careless, and some who start fires deliberately. Yes, I mean, it should be absolute common sense not to throw a lit cigarette butt into dry, tinder dry grassland. But Clearly, some people don't recognise that as a risk, and it is a struggle to get the message through to people who simply don't see that as a problem. They're the hardest to reach group usually, and I think everybody struggles. But yes, fire safety, particularly at the moment, is a worry. A few years ago, we saw the wildfires in the east end of London ripping through a street. It's not just parks; this affects people's homes as well. So, getting those messages out that people should be very conscious not to allow fires to start is really important.
This comes as firefighters have spent the night dampening down hotspots following a blaze at an industrial site in Snodland. It broke out at Mill Street yesterday morning. Advice to keep doors and windows closed because of smoke has now been lifted. Meanwhile, two people have been treated by paramedics following a garage fire in Gillingham. It's unclear what caused the blaze on Salisbury Avenue yesterday evening. Crews were also sent to tackle a field fire on Discovery Road in Ashford. They managed to put out the flames and no one there was hurt.
Kent Online News.
A former police officer who sexually assaulted five women at a nightclub in Maidstone has avoided being sent to prison. A court's heard Mark Slade was drunk when he behaved in a predatory and creepy way at Beer Keller in Bank Street in January 2023. The 51-year-old was serving as a constable with the West Mercia Force in Worcestershire at the time. He's been given a suspended sentence in order to do 80 hours of unpaid work. He's also been barred from ever working in the police service. A man's been charged after police seized drugs, cash and a knife in Gillingham. The 36-year-old was arrested following reports of a suspicious vehicle in May Road last week. Officers found cocaine and heroin during the search. The suspect is due at Crown Court next month. Three suspected fuel thieves have been arrested following a police chase near Tunbridge. A vehicle failed to stop for officers on the A26 and was followed through West Peckham on Sunday night. Two barrels of fuel were seized and the men, who are in their 20s and 30s, remain in custody. Police are hunting a man who's said to have exposed himself on a bus heading to Bluewater. It happened on the 96 near Greenhithe earlier this month. We've shared a CCTV image at Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
12 new modular homes are being built at a former car park in Bluebell Hill to provide temporary accommodation for families over the next 100 years. The project is designed to address the growing need for short-term accommodation in Tunbridge and Worling, with between 90 and 100 households currently on the waiting list. The homes are modern, high-quality and energy efficient. I've been speaking to Councillor Robin Betts from the Council.
What we've got, and it just the groundbreaking day was just a few days ago, but we've got 12 modular family homes going forward at the site at Bluebell Hill, which is a redundant commuter car park. So the great thing about this is it's going to be 12 A-plus rated energy-efficient homes that's going to support families in Tunbridge and Morley that find themselves in that desperate situation of being homeless.
And I understand that this isn't, obviously, it's not permanent housing, it's temporary accommodation. So they're going to be used as a stopgap until people find more permanent places to live.
Yes, that's it. It's under that term of temporary accommodation. So in that immediate short term, when a family finds themselves homeless, then we've got this accommodation waiting and ready to house families immediately. And then obviously once they're in that accommodation, they're safe and secure, then we start looking for more permanent accommodation that suits their needs.
Fantastic. Now, what can you tell me about these modular homes? I mean, it sounds amazing. I mean, I'd quite fancy one myself. Can you
They
tell me,
are.
what's inside and what they look like?
Yeah, I went to the factory. The amazing thing is that they're all built in a factory undercover. So the quality of manufacture, the attention to detail is just out of this world. I was on the factory floor looking at it and looking at the ones that are being built for Tunbridge and Morley. And so they're just like a normal home, but better because they got A-rated energy efficiency, they got internal ventilation, triple glazed windows. So they are an absolutely amazing home for the purpose of obviously looking after our residents in that desperate time.
And as you said, comfortable, safe, secure, and by far a much better option than some of the other choices than sometimes these families do find themselves in.
Yes, I mean, what we find is that a lot of authorities depend on nightly paid accommodation. And the trouble with that is, excuse me, you just never know where you're going to end up as a family. So with having accommodation within our own control and to a very high standard, and obviously because it's an A-rated energy energy efficient home, it means that the utility costs are really, really low. And when a family is in that desperate situation, which is normally because they're financially stressed, then moving into a home that's really cheap to run and look after is obviously is really important to them.
And you mentioned about there being 12 of these modular homes. Is it the sort of project that can expand if the demand is there? Is there an option to get another dozen, say, and keep expanding it?
Yes, I mean you've hit the nail on the head there because they're 12 modular homes. They're built in the factory, so that the manufacturer is really quick under controlled conditions. So the quality is about as high as you can get. And then of course, then they're brought to site and craned on site. So the whole process is really quick. So what we're looking at is once we've done this first phase, then obviously the commuter car park is very large. Now if this works really well. Then I'd definitely be looking at phase two if we can, but we're just trying this out first, see how it works. But from what I can see, working with Zedpods, the manufacturer, and the site, and being there the last few days looking at the groundbreaking works, I think it's going to be an absolutely amazing project, and one that's so innovative for Tom and Jamoli. It's the first one where we've built our own homes for temporary accommodation, and they're carbon neutral and A star rated. It's just an incredible development that's going forward.
Bosses of a company hoping to rival Eurostar want to use a former Kent rail depot to house trains. The chief executive of Gemini says the Chartlecken site would be key to their plans to bring international services back to Ashford. If approved, their trains could go straight to Disneyland Paris. It's hoped a review into struggling water infrastructure in Ashford could help put a stop to overdevelopment. There have been a number of outages in local villages this year, which have led to concerns about new homes being built in the area. Council bosses have now set up a task group to assess supply resilience. They'll be speaking to water companies, regulators and residents. There are plans to turn offices at a factory site in Faversham into homes and a gym. Developers want to create 36 properties in a building at Western Works on Brent Hill. You can see pictures of what it might look like at Kent Online. A mum who lives on a new build estate near Gravesend says ongoing problems with parking and dust are causing daily misery. Jodie Weston moved to Ebbsfleet Garden City with her three-year-old son. She says people are leaving their cars on grass verges and pavements because there aren't enough spaces. She's also criticised dust from ongoing construction work. Developers say they're using mist cannons to minimise disruption, and parking is in line with the original planning application.
Kent Online News.
Now, people facing unemployment in Kent are being given the chance to train as actors to help the British Army. Callaghan UK runs mass casualty scenarios to prepare soldiers for what they might face in the field. They've been recruiting from job centres in Sittingbourne and Sheppey. John Sims is from Callaghan UK.
We've got a team of makeup artists, amputees and role players who specialise in acting as casualties. They're made up to look gory, if you like, for injuries such as, it can be anything from minor grazes, from being knocked over on the road sort of thing, right away up to explosions and graphic simulation stuff there. Gunshot wounds or anything in between, depending what the scenario depicts for the exercise that we're doing. We've got a very diverse team. We have people from all backgrounds. We've got ex-teachers, we've got engineers, everybody, basically. It doesn't matter what your background is. We do go around job centres and we do recruit, but we do have an induction process to make sure that the people that we are recruiting are suitable to do the work that's required of them. There is a process in place that means that because of the nature of the work, not all people are suitable for it. There could be people with trauma in their life. Obviously, the last thing we want to do for mental health reasons is then go and subject them to a scenario that could bring back memories, things like that. So there's lots of background information and checks that are done on the people. So yes, we do recruit from job centres, but we do recruit from other means as well.
Colin Smith is the company's national operations manager. He says the work they do is incredibly valuable for the armed forces.
If you're deploying into harm's way, then you know anything you can do to prepare you for that is critical. And I think that's what we offer. We offer that inoculation into a wartime environment, whether that be dealing with a casualty, whether that just be dealing with a public, a community who are upset, distressed because you know their town is getting taken over by a foreign force. That's what we do. Without that training, are the British forces truly fully prepared? Of course, they do an awful lot themselves, but I like to think that we help them. We help them big time.
We can hear now from Molly and Mark, who are two of the actors.
What we do here, we deliver realistic training for our armed forces and international services. It's also really important that we are delivering a realistic scenario to put as much pressure on the troops to prepare them for the front line.
We make it as real as possible for them. So they do the training with us. So if they make the mistakes with us, so they don't make the mistakes when they go away, and it saves lives.
I think it's such a rush. We get such adrenaline from doing it. When we're doing it, it's so real. It feels real. Everybody that's involved takes a lot of planning, and it's just amazing. I feel really passionate about what I do, and I'm so glad that I can support that.
Yeah, we both love doing it.
A Kent man is on the final stretch of what's been described as the world's hardest triathlon. Kevin Magnay set off from London last Friday. He's already run to Dover and swam across the Channel to France. He's now cycling to Paris and has raised more than £14,000 for charity. We're being urged to buy special glasses or make a pinhole projector to look at the eclipse in Kent later. The sun will be partially blocked by the moon tomorrow evening. You'll get the best view if you head to coastal areas or somewhere up high.
Kent Online Sports.
Taking a quick look at cricket now, and Kent will be hoping to get through to the knockout stages of the One Day Cup today. They've travelled to take on Warwickshire in the final group game of the competition. The Spitfires are in with a chance of qualifying after beating Leicestershire Foxes on Sunday. And in athletics, Kent's Dina Asher-Smith has finished fifth in the final of the 100 metres at the European Athletics Championships. The defending champion was beaten by fellow Brit Amy Hunt, who took gold last night in Birmingham. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.